I'm grabbing a protein bar for a little energy boost. Tom.
Thank you. I have a question, Don. Now, first, I wanted to mention another shout-out for the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation here, which I think has got, at the last meeting, they said they have something like more than 50,000 members worldwide. But my question for you is, to help me understand the shadow side a little better, there's a saying we have, you know, out of sight, out of mind. And I think this is one of the biggest problems we have with nuclear weapons. We never see them. We never touch them. We never hear them. They don't make their presence obvious. And so, do we? Is this an aspect of shadow that we have to be aware of?
Denial, it's called.
Denial, yeah.
You know that statement. Denial is not just a river in Africa. I would like a lot more shout outs, a lot more, because so many of you have come at the break to say, well, how about, so get lined up in behind the mic and let's have more, because Santa Barbara is absolutely riddled with world carers. And if we're not part of that, I think it's because we don't have the emotional or energetic support to be there. And these places are places that they've crossed that line sometime in the past. You could not have, help me with the name of the guy at Nuclear, David Krieger. David Krieger has been doing this kind of work now for, I would say, close to 30 years. And you don't have that kind of longevity unless you're working from an energy that is one of the higher energies. Yes.
I think maybe this is not a coincidence. I was sitting in my car today. I had a little free time, which is unusual. The dentist was very quick. He didn't charge me any less, however. But I was reading this, rereading a book that's been sitting in my car, The Little Prince by Saint-Exupéry. And there was a passage in it that when you were talking about tending the planet, I thought, oh, I've just been reading about that. Now, the little prince lived on a very small planet. It was no bigger than a house,
yes,
if you've read the book before. And here's what he was talking about in part of it. And in fact, on the little prince's planet, there were good, as on all planets, good plants and bad plants. The good plants came from good seeds, and the bad plants came from bad seeds. But the seeds are invisible. They sleep in the secrecy of the ground until one of them decides to wake up. Then it stretches and begins to sprout, quite timidly at first, a charming, harmless little twig reaching towards the sun. If it's a radish seed or a rosebush seed, you can let it sprout all it likes. But if it's the seed of a bad plant, you must pull it up right away, as soon as you can recognize it. As it happens, there were terrible seeds on the little prince's planet, baobab seeds. The planet's soil was infested with them. Now, if you attend to a baobab too late, you can never get rid of it again. It overgrows the whole planet. Its roots pierce right through. And if the planet is too small, and if there are too many baobabs, they make it burst into pieces. It's a question of discipline, the little prince told me later on. When you've finished washing and dressing each morning, you must tend to your planet. You must be sure to pull up the baobabs regularly, as soon as you can tell them apart from the rose bushes, which they very closely resemble when they're young. It's very tedious work, but very easy.
How wonderful. Thank you. Before, Mary, I want to go, that reminded me of a story that I had planned to say. And it's a story that was told at Word and Life, of course, in another building. And it was one that Ann Jagua said when she presented, that at one stage she found herself so paralyzed, I think, in terms of the prospects of the world, that for the whole summer what she did was she had taken some sages, or, you know, plants from a river here in Santa Maria Creek. Santa Maria Creek.
It was plants from a creek that was being restored, and they wanted to keep them alive so they could put them back.
While they did the restoring, you know, they wanted these, because these plants existed nowhere else. And so for that summer, she, you know, carried water to those plants. And that, she said, was her practice. That touched me so much. And Mary, are you? Yes.
So, I'd like to be standing there with giving part of a presentation.
Okay, sorry.
At the break, Dawn, there was some beautiful music coming from somewhere. And what it reminded me of, as well as what several friends and I were discussing, is the gifting of everyone in this room. Some maybe less global, but all important. I think of a friend of mine who is at present taking care of her elderly, very frail mother. And this member of Word and Life has been loved to travel, still loves to, and yet she's doing that. Mm-hmm. And the gift that she has shared with so many is her gift of music. Mm-hmm. I think of Christine, who's often sharing her ability to sing with us, Tom with his guitar. And the gift is intangible, but it touches the spirit.
Yes. Yes, thank you.
Judith, I just wanted to share that the music that you're hearing is Cyprian, who is still with us today, in his CD here called Echo of Your Peace, Cyprian Consiglio.
Yes.
Well, I'm responding in part to your call for a shout-out, and also I have a question. So I think we've been blessed in Santa Barbara to have quite a number of locally based charitable institutions, mm-hmm. and two that I'm personally familiar with that have a great international impact are C International, which sponsors trips abroad with eye surgeons to restore mm-hmm. sight. A lot of very simple operations, but a lot of people would not see, literally, were they not in existence. And, of course, Direct Relief International, which is an incredible organization yes. in terms of providing goods and goods to countries that are hit with disasters at a very low administrative cost.
Yes.
I know you deliberately didn't want to talk about the nation-centric, mm-hmm. but it's hard not to sit here and think, as perhaps we are a neocolonial power still, do you have any nonpartisan thoughts on what kind of shadows we face in becoming a different nation?
Mm-hmm. I don't think I can speak extemporaneously on that, but what I can say is that the exercise that I am going to draw from Joanna Macy, my intent, and I want to get a high sign maybe 15 minutes before the end, is I'll go through her process, and then I thought that maybe a large number of people in the room might choose, because I'm not going to give a topic for doing her exercise, might choose the nation, and that there might be some really important things that happen to each person privately around this big, big issue. That I know I vacillate between going on the TV from being just outrageously angry, rageful, to depressed, inert, you know. And then I have something called a husband, and many of you know him. He is outrageously mild, you know. And it's like, he feels, I think, like I feel, but he, somehow or the other, the emotion that comes up in him is not rage. I want to learn how to do that. other people who want to either talk about other places here in Santa Barbara or would like to change, take another tack. And maybe we could even come back to this tack of opening the topic of the nation to the group. But we could also open the topic of our program here to the group. Let me also just say, in terms of books I brought, I have a very old book, very old, like 30 years old, which was my first exposure to Wilbur. It's called The Spectrum of Consciousness. And for this, I ordered a few new books. And if you like picture books, big print, this is it. It's called The Integral Vision, Ken Wilbur, and you can come up and take a look at it. It's like everything you need to know but we're afraid to ask is in here in a very readable, digestible form. Okay. Other people want to come up with ideas for discussion?
There's a group in Santa Barbara that I just became aware of, loosely attached to the hospice movement, called Threshold Choir. And when Mary talked about the power of music, it has been a wonderful thing. They meet every alternate Friday night at the Quaker Meeting House, and it's a cappella singing of women at the bedsides of people.
Oh.
And it's a wonderful group that I just discovered and have enjoyed very much.
Very good. Thanks, Bob.
Yes.
My frame is still shaky from hip surgery. Having worked as a Maryland missionary in East Africa for 10 years, I went there as a dualist, trained, colonial mentality that I didn't even know I had. I came back beginning to understand how to decolonize myself, and it happened from the people. So it can reverse itself from exposure to people who are not dualists, the people. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wonderful experience.
Mm-hmm.
I would do a quick shout out for another organization. It isn't really local. It is international, but they have a lot of local active people, and that's Human Rights Watch. Very world-centric organization, of course, that's placing people in the most dangerous countries in the world. They're getting in where the New York Times reporters and Washington Post reporters aren't getting in.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think that there is a dinner coming up in early November that Human Rights Watch has here every year, and there are a lot of active members, and if you're interested, mm-hmm. it's a great organization.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yesterday was a day that I chanced upon, not because I knew about it in advance, but I was on my little trusty iPad, which I want you to know is the most marvelous toy I think there exists. This was called Global Oneness Day. And all day yesterday was live streaming webcast that Alice told me she was on part of the day, and it had among people Ken Wilbur. He got a whole 45 minutes. Let's see. Barbara Marks Hubbard had to share 45 minutes with two other people, including Andrew Harvey. But it was amazing that this was available to us all day yesterday. And so maybe part of what we need here, if this is an important thing for us, is to have some kind of clearance house for when these unbelievable opportunities emerge. But I'm wondering if it might be the time when a future Word in Life could be on the whole of it on how to tend how to tend being world-centric. Because I don't think we can get to being world-centric by just wanting to, by just goodwill. I think we need to learn, and we need to nurture, and we need to be exposed to the other side of it, which is looking straight in the face the pain of the world. And so also, you know, for our country. Is it 22?
Yes.
Okay, so there's still time.
Don, I think I'm facing a shadow right now because I don't really want to do this. It's talking about something that my husband and my what we did, the missionary work we did, and it. I was able in Zimbabwe a long time ago, and we're still involved. I'm still involved, and I don't want to. I'm feeling embarrassed about talking about something that I did, but the organization, the Mission Doctors, has done 50 years of work bringing relief and to people in Africa and South America and Central America. So it's I just wanted to say that.
I am so glad you came forth. During the break, someone reminded me about, you know, your whole life, Jane, of going there. Jane and Jim had three or four of their babies there in Africa.
Well, we took five and had two there.
Okay, took five and had two. And then, since then, Jane has gone back now several times. You know, this is hard work to go into a country and make yourself available. And it's not like if that gift is necessarily welcome. And in fact, one has to realize that when you come in with some of the riches from the first world, it's a stumbling spot for those people there who might have lost some of their ways of keeping healthy because of colonization, and now they have to be the receivers for something as basic as health. And to do that, one has to be respectful of how people how they tend the fire. Yes.
I wonder about the other kind of colonization that still goes on, and that is the cultural colonization of how the whole world is becoming, you know, American movies, Coca-Cola, all of these things, so that even if we're not there with armed forces, we're there getting into people's heads and changing people's cultures.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, it's a question, again, of the dualism, materialism versus things of the spirit. And how do we hold the tension of both, not either or? Yes.
Hi, Dawn.
Hi.
I think it's important to have a one world, but I also think it's important to tend to people here in Santa Barbara. We had a panel here Monday on homelessness. We had restorative policing, and I think that is something that would really be informative for people to know more about. We have incredible police officers doing work, social work, really, and I think that would be something important to hear about. And we had Doctors Without Walls who come. I work for Wheelbridge of Santa Barbara. We provide housing for the homeless. We have a three-tier level. First, when they first get off of homelessness, and they can keep moving up until actually we have a third housing, but they each have we have seven studios where people either they have to be sober for 2 years and they have to sign a grueling form that most of your neighbors would never sign. And they have, like I said, sober 2 years, and they have to go to school or work. So this is the third one we have. But what I want to say is a lot of times people will talk about homelessness, but what people need to do is to be more involved with it and relational, I think. Maureen Earls isn't here today, but she's somebody that's really stepped up. And she and I think it's Mary come over and have Thanksgiving, St. Patrick's Day, with some of the people in our house. They buy the food. I don't know how it actually works because I work in administration, but they actually, we all eat together, and it's really incredible, and you find out we're all really the same when we get down to eating together and breaking bread. But I think a lot of people are scared, and sometimes it's good to be take care of yourself. You have to have a certain amount of fear, but a lot of times it's just not knowing what to say or what to do to people. And so sometimes just saying hi or those kind of things are important. Thank you.
Yes, yes. Thank you. Yes, yes. Time-wise? Okay. All right. I'm hoping this thing is... Yes, yes. Jude.
When she talked about the homelessness, I want to make you aware of the community kitchen. I know you've seen it in the papers and you've heard about it. And it's not because I've been associated with it for many years. It's just some observations. First of all, I had a job of trying to get new volunteers for the group that I represent. But one of the things I said was something like this. You get more thank yous in one morning working the community kitchen than you get from your kids in a lifetime. A second thing that happened is several years ago, the director at that time had me call all the churches. Now, you're probably under the impression that the community kitchen is served by so many churches. Not true. There's only about 8 basic groups that serve the kitchen, and there could be a lot more. So my message today is, if you've never visited there, you don't have to come and volunteer, but come and look it over. It's very good. The Ridley Tree spent $450,000 to put in a state-of-the-art kitchen. It serves the people well. They've got new people running the volunteer program, and it's an inspiration to go there. And the thing that always inspires me is when I'm there for 2 hours, twice a month, people look up and say, thank you for being here.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you, Jude. Things that we're not going to get to, but I think, you know, not all people mention music, but there's other things in music in addition to, you know, the melody that warms the heart. And that's like the words of music. And I remember as a child, part of my radicalization, even though I grew up in the West Indies, was calypsos. And I learned about Lord Kitchener, who was, you know, the English member of, what do they call it? It's not Congress, Parliament, that was the one who got rid of slavery in England, long before in the United States. And so songs often carry for us the tale of work that's done on the grassroots level. What's this little exercise that Joanna Macy is doing? Well, it's a very simple formula. It's sort of threefold and then a going forth. And it's gratitude, knowing our pain, and seeing with new eyes. So sort of, first of all, together, I want to just go through a possible scenario of this. And what I want to place this particular one in the context of Malala of Pakistan, where Obama the other day said Pakistan, and I think it's John Stewart said, so he's now going to speak it in in their accent, you know, instead of Pakistan. Okay, Malala. Malala is the young woman, the activist child, 14. So we could imagine that if that has been troubling us, one of the things following this mode would be, first of all, to place ourselves in the presence of gratitude and just spontaneously allow ourselves to have percolated to the surface those things that we are grateful for. When I do the exercise, I will say some things actually using the words of Joanna Macy. But we could be grateful that we know about this young woman. You know, that it's not something that happened in secret. We could be grateful that there is somebody as young as she that is able to stand up and be seen. We could go on and on. Then the second thing in her plan here is knowing our pain. So we could look at that image of a child being shot so that the bullet passed through and ended up, I think, in her shoulder, but that it wasn't just the path of the bullet itself, but one of the things she's suffering from is the infection from where the bullet passed. And so we look at that and we can feel the pain of this disgraceful act. And then we spend time there, and then we move on to seeing with new eyes. Seeing with new eyes, the third piece. And seeing with new eyes, we might look at all these stories that have sprung up since then of the number of children in Pakistan that have found their voice. And so that, you know, there is now not one Malala, but there are hundreds of Malalas speaking up for the right of girl people to have education. And then she suggests that this kind of pattern can be a giant spiral in which doing these three things, there is like a going forth to whatever the next thing is. And so what I'd like to do is suggest that each of us pick something that is troubling us, something that is weighing on your heart. And here it might be the situation that in less than 2 weeks we choose a new leader of this country. It might be something quite else, something you're involved in at close range. But take something like that, and whether you close your eyes or you take notes or you I'm going to ask you to stay with that one thing. I did not write this out. I'm looking at this from my iPad, and I'm not terribly adept at finding how to make these things work. This is from the book Active Hope, How to Face the Mess We're In Without Feeling Guilty and Paralyzed. She says, the spiral provides a structure we can fall back on and into whatever we need to tap into the resilience and resourcefulness arising from the larger web of life. So if you're sickened by a disturbing news report, you can step into gratitude simply by focusing on your breath, taking a moment to give thanks for whatever may be sustaining you in this moment. As you feel the air entering your nostrils, give thanks for oxygen, for your lungs, for all that brings you to life. The question, to whom am I grateful, moves your attention beyond yourself to those who you receive from, those who support you. A moment of gratitude strengthens your capacity to look at rather than turn away from a disturbing situation. Now, as you allow yourself to take in whatever you see, allow yourself also to feel whatever you feel. When you experience pain for something beyond your immediate self-interest, this reveals your caring, compassion, and connection. By honoring the pain of the world, in whatever form it takes, you take it seriously and allow the signal it brings to rouse you. When seeing with new eyes, you know that it isn't just you facing this. You are just one part of a much larger story. A continuing stream of life on earth that has flowed for more than 3.5 billion years and that has survived 5 mass extinctions. As you let yourself experience the pain of something you cannot change, you sink into a deeper, stronger flow and experience yourself as part of it, and experience a different set of possibilities. Widening your vision increases the resources available to you. The same channels of connectedness that bring pain for the that brings pain of the world to you also allows a flow of strength, courage, renewal, determination, and the help of all the invisibles. With this shift of experience, we can let go of feeling we need to sort everything out. Instead, you focus on finding and playing your part, offering your gift of active hope and love, your best contribution to the healing of our world. And as you move into going forth, consider what this might be and what your next step will be. Then take that step. And so before we get the signal that we must go, is there anyone who wants to talk? Speak out of that experience. Namaste. Thank you.